My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell, told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER. Promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. Hey, it's that time of year for those of you, God forbid, you got to keep your New Year's resolution. What if you're a timeshare owner and you want to get out of your timeshare? Maybe that's at the top of your list, or maybe you made a bad investment over the years. It doesn't matter. Let not your heart be troubled, because the new year is also a reminder that you can get serious about getting rid of this timeshare and doing it right and doing it legally. And Lone Star Transfer is absolutely an amazing group of people. From beginning to end, I highly recommend, if you have any type of timeshare, I want you to contact Lone Star and tell them I told you to call. They'll give you a free, no obligation consultation, and they'll help get you out of your timeshare. They'll do it the right way, the legal way, and it will take very little effort on your part, just by calling #250 on your mobile phone and saying the keyword timeshare. That's #250 on your cell phone, keyword timeshare. You can check them out online at LoneStarTransfer.com.
You have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from iHeartMedia.
All right, glad you're with us. And write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. It is 800-941-SEAN if you want to join us. This is getting very interesting to watch the very cowardly Democrats deal with the radical extremists in their party that are clearly virulent anti-Semites. Watching them cow, bow down, and they're afraid, and they don't know what to do. Great column out by Michael Goodwin. He writes for the New York Post out today. You know, and he starts talking about this Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota and, you know, Speaker Pelosi announcing she's going to pass a resolution condemning anti-Semitism, citing charges Omar has repeatedly made. The most recent is the myth of dual loyalty. If you support Israel, it's a dual loyalty. And so anyway, what's fascinating is that they were supposed to have this vote today, and apparently there's not enough Democrats that are willing to denounce the madness, the anti-Semitic rants that now become all too frequent, and they can't get that done. So the latest plan is they're going to water down the resolution into basically mush and condemn all forms of hate, including Islamophobia. And, well, I don't know anybody that's saying anything Islamophobic in Congress on a fairly regular basis. But this is your new radical, extreme, democratic, socialist, hate Trump mob party. This is who they are. And it's obviously growing more anti-Israel every day, and a growing number of anti-Semites are being outspoken, but the fear of Pelosi and others to take them on. Look, when Ocasio-Cortez supported Omar, that then put fear, it strikes fear into the heart of Nancy Pelosi, you know, because they won't deal with this forthrightly. You know, and this goes back for years. We saw this often in New York. You saw it with the Reverend Sharpton and his talk about yarmulkes and interlopers over the years, and Haimetown by Jesse Jackson, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, all of this just shows there is a gutless, spineless cowardice here, and they can't even stand up for what's right. You know, not one person that I know in the media thought a whole lot of the fact that a picture was revealed long after Obama left the presidency of him and Louis Farrakhan. And I was thinking, let's see, they lived in the same neighborhood. You know, we know Obama was in the Church of GD America. We know that Reverend Wright got along with, as long well as a guy by the name of Father Flager, no fan of mine, with Farrakhan. It was small circles of extremism, you know, community activism and whatever a community organizer is, Acorn, Alinsky. You know, it's all born out of this black liberation theology as taught by the Reverend Wright. Then, of course, Ayers, Dorn, the Nation of Islam leader, Louis Farrakhan, a virulent racist anti-Semite, all in the same neighborhood. And I suspected there was a picture of Michelle and Mrs. Farrakhan, but couldn't find it. Turns out it was hidden for all those years on purpose. Which shouldn't surprise anybody. But hey, we'll see what happens here. But Steve Scalise said the resolution that they are drawing up here is that Congresswoman Omar continues to display anti-Semitic remarks and comments, and these are clearly her beliefs. And he is saying, rightly so, that she probably needs to be removed from the Foreign Affairs Committee, considering she has these extremist views. You know, there's a great piece in The Federalist, and that Democrats in their resolution supposedly condemning anti-Semitism was supposed to be voted on. It is useless, frankly, and a transparent attempt to distract from a serious issue, because not once is it noted in this Federalist piece does it condemn Congresswoman Omar or the strain of anti-Semitism that she's helping to normalize on the left. And in fact, the resolution contains so many useless platitudes that Omar could probably support it herself. And Congress has no business setting guidelines for acceptable political speech, but Speaker Pelosi does have the power to name the committee appointments. And that's where it really matters. Alan Dershowitz saying that Omar must be defeated. He's right. You got another Democrat refusing to resign after being caught in a racism scandal. That was in Maryland over the weekend. In this particular case, you have a state legislator there exposed for routinely blurting out the N-word. Now, if this was a Republican, it would be everywhere all at once. Ocasio-Cortez coming out in support of her anti-Semitic colleague. The president condemning the anti-Semitic remarks. So, you know, now that this has now become, again, this is now their problem. And the networks, they're quiet, as usual. And not expressing outrage. But if it's a Republican, they'll be out in full force. And this attempt at watering down a resolution and making it that broad is because they don't have the courage of any conviction, especially things that they would say and do. It's like everything else. You know what? If Democrats really cared about women like they say that they do, women should be believed when accusations are made. If they're willing to stand consistently on the idea of no due process, no presumption of innocence, well, you've got to admit the silence is pretty deafening when it comes to the lieutenant governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, who is not only being accused of assault, but of rape. And the women involved have witnesses that were told at the time of the event, apparently all credible. And nobody's saying a thing. They care so much. They have this monopoly of compassion. Identity politics runs the Democratic Party. But yet you have a governor in blackface. And what's happened in that instance? What's the follow-up to any of this? So you've got Democrats in a full-on panic here that this House vote, this resolution condemning anti-Semitism, now has to be delayed. Democrats scrambling to rewrite a watered-down version of it all. And the declaration won't even mention Omar by name. And now it won't come up. Maybe the earliest is going to be tomorrow. And we're discussing it, said Steny Hoyer. We are strongly against anti-Semitism, but we strongly are against prejudice directed at any group. What does that mean? You know, how about a fake how about a resolution condemning Farrakhan? Or what about Congresswoman Omar? Her biggest defender is Linda Sarsour, who herself has serious issues. She was out campaigning with Kirsten Gillibrand. Anyway, so the Daily Caller has a piece in response to a House resolution condemning Congresswoman Omar. Sarsour attacked Speaker Pelosi, saying a typical white feminist upholding the patriarchy, doing the dirty work of powerful white men. House Democrats announcing the resolution Monday, but they have to keep putting it off. We wanted Barbara Lee to be the Speaker of the House, not Nancy Pelosi. Nancy is a typical white feminist upholding the patriarchy and doing the dirty work of powerful white men. God forbid the men are upset. No worries. Nancy to the rescue to stroke their ego, she writes. And nearly two-thirds of Americans don't support what the Democrats are doing with their endless investigations. That came out today. Even the Washington Post is sick of Hillary's lies, which will hit as well. Look, the big battle is now over this emergency funding bill. It's frustrating, but it's going to get done. The president is going to have his way. He's going to be able to redirect unused military funds to build the border wall, something that we have been pointing out he has the constitutional and legislative authority to do. Legislatively, you could just look at U.S. Code 284, Section B, Paragraph 7, where, quote, types of support for agencies of the United States, the purposes for which the secretary may provide support under subsection A for other departments or agencies of the federal government or a state, local, tribal law enforcement agency on the following: construction of roads, barriers, installation of lighting to block drug smuggling corridors across the international boundaries of the U.S. You cross-reference subsection A, 10 U.S.C. 284, the Secretary of Defense may provide support for the counter-drug activities or activities to counter transnational organized crime and other department agencies of the federal government, state, local, tribal, or foreign law enforcement agency for any of the purposes set forth in subsection B.C. as applicable, as in the case of support in subsection B, which support is requested and by the official responsible, et cetera, et cetera. So legislatively, the law is on the president's side. And it's been done by past presidents. And we have 31 of these emergency declarations in effect right now. Now, if you think it was bad, it's gotten dramatically worse. If you had any time and you got to listen to Secretary Nielsen of Homeland Security today, we've got a major problem on our border, and if we don't fix it and don't fix it soon, we are now in a point, I don't know what, it becomes a point of no return, really, for the United States. You have migrant families arriving now in busloads like we've never seen before. You see that the amount of numbers, we are going to outpace literally what they have done in a two-year period, in 1 year, our border security deal. Let me give you the numbers. Oh, and Ocasio-Cortez says those who support immigration laws are racist. The secretary testifying today, this is not a manufactured crisis, a real serious sustained crisis at our border, tens of thousands of illegal aliens arriving at our doorstep every month. She said gang members are smuggling new recruits into the U.S., Border Patrol agents see a 50% spike over the last fiscal year, the number of gang members apprehended at the southern border. We have drugs, criminals, violence spilling into our country every single week. She went through all of these statistics, which are fairly shocking and should be alarming to every American, and went on to say the agency is now on track to apprehend more migrants crossing illegally in the first 6 months of this fiscal year than the entirety of fiscal year 17. And at the current pace, we're on track to encounter close to 1 million illegal aliens at our southern border this year. A million. And Nielsen's testimony came one day after the Customs and Border Patrol revealed that in February alone, U.S. authorities apprehended or detained 75,000 illegal aliens, constituting a 30% increase in illegal encounters or apprehensions over the previous month. And Nielsen went on to say, I can report today that Customs and Border Patrol is forecasting the problem's going to get worse this spring. And officials now say, you know, they allow these families to come in. They try to exploit the asylum loopholes we have. Only 10% of them are ever granted. And yet the other people don't never show up at all when the time becomes time to go to court. They just don't show. So it'll be voted down in the House and Senate, but they won't be able to override the president's veto, which means he will get the money and he will build the wall, which probably is what's precipitating the crisis at the moment, which is people are saying, uh-oh, this guy means it, and he's going to get the wall money, and he's going to build it, and he's going to get it done. And for all you never-Trumpers out there, all you Republicans, that's it. He caved. He didn't cave. He changed their strategies, as I told you at the time. Well, now he has $10 billion to keep building the wall. And more coming. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of the program. Hey, if you're one of 34 million Americans that smokes, you know what a hassle it can be. For me, I'm out playing golf and I come back smelling like cigars. It's the smell on your hands and your breath, your clothes. But now, thanks to Juul, you don't have to worry about it anymore. Juul is a vaporizer. It does contain nicotine for a satisfying transition. Now, when I found Juul, it was a complete game changer in my life. I don't smoke any cigars any longer, and Juul was designed by smokers for smokers to be an alternative to whatever it is you're smoking. So if you're one of 34 million adults who do smoke, cigars, cigarettes, pipe, whatever, well, there is an alternative to all of them. Now, to discover the smoking alternative that's like nothing you've ever tried, just visit juul.com/switchamerica. That's juul.com/switchamerica. Now, warning, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is addictive. So a friend of mine found this in an AP news story going back to June 29th, 1989, where the UN predicted, a senior UN environmental official says, entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if the global warming trend is not reversed by the year 2000. Ugh. Wow. Thank goodness we survived that. I can't believe it. Ocasio-Cortez says we have 12 years to go. Interesting. Pelosi rejecting the demand. This is from the Jewish News Syndicate. Apparently, 12 separate Jewish organizations want Omar booted from the House Foreign Affairs Committee. The problem with Pelosi, she's afraid of all these extreme radical freshmen because she's thinking they're going to say they're going to have a no confidence vote and kick her out as speaker. Anyway, we hope you'll continue to demonstrate your commitment to the high moral standards of your office by removing Representative Omar, a woman who has repeatedly exhibited strong biases against the state of Israel and the Jewish people, from this critically important and sensitive committee. Groups also sounded the alarm ahead of Omar's scheduled appearance at the Islamic Relief USA, whose parent organization and chapters have documented ties to terror organizations, they write. And this was in the Hill as well, that Elliot Engel, apparently the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, he's not going to remove Congresswoman Omar from the committee. No, I'm not close to it yet. I'm not sure what it's going to take. By the way, Barack Obama in a speech said in Winnipeg that what we need now is the next generation of leaders modeled after himself and the former First Lady Michelle. Simple. Learn at the altar of Frank Marshall Davis, then learn Alinsky rules, then learn to be a community organizer, learn about ACORN, go to the church of GD America, start your political career in the home of domestic unrepentant terrorists. Simple. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. So back to Obama. He's speaking in Winnipeg at some event that he's at. And he details what he's planning, which is he's creating a university for social change. And it's aimed at developing the skills of young people from around the world who harbor cynicism towards old institutions. Quote, if we train them, if we give them skills, support, financing, media training, spotlights, then they're the ones that are going to carry forward the solutions we so desperately need, he said. If we can train a million Baracks and Michelles who are running around thinking that they can change the world, hope is attainable. I mean, look at his background. It is this was so easy to predict. Number one, it was pretty obvious he was going to win, but nobody wanted to vet Barack Obama. Nobody did. It was like the media was having, you know, they were caught up in the hope and the change and thrills up their legs and everything else. And it was, you know, he read a great teleprompter. You got to give him credit. So maybe he had the media training of which he speaks here. You know, I always thought we want to train people to be who they are. Why does somebody have to be like somebody else? Don't you want to be an original? Don't you want to be your own person? Don't you want to be just be the person you are? We have to train to become Barack Obama, Michelle, or you just be yourself. Very simple. But you would, on paper, have thought that somebody indoctrinated into the thinking of Frank Marshall Davis, Alinsky, you know, a community organizer, Acorn, you know, one-term senator that votes present all the time, somebody that advocated black liberation theology as taught at the Church of Reverend Wright and the Church of G.D. America, and began his political career in the home of unrepentant domestic terrorists. And he only got asked once in any big forum, and that was by George Stephanopoulos, only because he was hosting a debate, and I fed him the question. He had never heard of Ayers and Dorn. Pretty remarkable. And the thing is, if you're indoctrinated into a way of thinking, and this is what I learned about Obama, he never, ever, he was a rigid ideologue. There was at no point that I saw in Obama the growth that maybe said to himself, maybe this isn't working. Now I'm now the only president in history that's never met, you know, had a year of 3% GDP growth, or that I've taken on more debt than every other president before me combined. And looking at the number of people on food stamps, gee, we're adding millions every year. 13 million in 8 years. Millions more in poverty. 8 million more in poverty. Lowest labor participation rate since the 70s. Lowest homeownership rate in 51 years. Worst recovery since the 40s. You know, who would think you'd want to duplicate that? At no point did he show any inclination to back off his indoctrination. Never did. It was very surprising. Now, Clinton, not a fan of in particular, but Clinton changed dramatically after their first 2 years in office, basically out of necessity, because Newt Gingrich wasn't going to go along with anything that Clinton was proposing, but very cleverly, and the Democrats of today would be smart to do it, but it'll be impossible. They can't do it. This class of Democrats is the most radical we've ever seen. That's why Nancy Pelosi can't, you know, is you know, literally and torn into a pretzel. She probably wants to deal with the Congresswoman Omar situation, but she fears dealing with it because she thinks this freshman class of new radicals will throw her out. So in that sense, it's really Speaker Ocasio-Cortez, because if Ocasio-Cortez rallies enough people, they're going to throw Nancy Pelosi out as Speaker. She knows it. She barely got it this time. And that then becomes a problem. But to think that the Democratic Party is they've now made a conscious decision. They're not going to do anything. They're not going to lift a finger to do something worthwhile to help the American people. And I'll compare that to Clinton. All of a sudden, Newt Gingrich comes to power, contract with America. First time Republicans had control of the House of Representatives in 40 years. It was all because of that contract, Newt's leadership. And it didn't happen overnight. It was part of a grand strategy that began with a course that was taught by Newt and preparation for candidates that brought about solutions, conservative solutions that would work for the country, very much in the vein of Reagan, who has had a very successful presidency. And that was renewing American civilization. And anyway, that they kept their promises in the first 100 days, as they said that they would. And they had a very successful run after. But one of the reasons for the success is Clinton changed. All of a sudden, you had a Democrat in the White House saying the era of big government is over and talking about the end of welfare as we know it. There was no sister soldier moment ever for Barack Obama. And hence, he gets the record that his rigid ideology would naturally lead to. And this is where the Democrats are today. They have now doubled down. Even if the president offers DACA, the president offers Dreamers, if the president, whatever compromise the president would give to them, they have no desire to pass any form of legislation that is going to advance either the American economy or make us more safe and more secure. You know, all these endless investigations, you know, points pretty much in one direction, that they have concluded they're not going to get what they want from Robert Mueller. You know, Joe DiGenova had great advice. I love Joe DiGenova. He's a former independent counsel himself. Excellent advice for Trump officials now that are, you know, at the Salem witch hunts, the new McCarthyism, if you will, is going on. And so DiGenova's advice is, okay, they have 81 targets, but that's just the beginning of the list. You got 8 separate congressional committees that are on the biggest fishing expedition with the largest net ever cast in the hopes that they might get lucky and find one thing on which they can say, see, he broke the law. We'll impeach him. They're in search of a crime. Show me the crime. Show me the man, I'll show you the crime. And I would anticipate there's no way in hell the White House is going to cooperate with these witch hunts. They're not going to. I mean, they're going to sit people down that know Donald Trump. Are you or have you ever been a friend of Donald Trump? And so many of the people that they're calling in to interview and go before these committees, they're all people that have, most of which have been there before. It's not like they're going to get any new information. The only thing they could do is maybe contradict themselves, likely not even on purpose, and it becomes a perjury trap. So DiGenova cleverly, you know, told Fox News last night that those that get these document requests should refuse to respond. And he rightly called it a perjury trap. He said it's not a legitimate investigation. It's a fishing expedition. They're trying to get people up there, make them look bad, so they can try and make the president look bad. No one should talk to Nadler's committee. Everyone should take the fifth. And if everyone takes the fifth, the American people will understand that this isn't a legitimate investigation. It's political theater. And he's right. It's disgraceful conduct approved of, by, and for Speaker Pelosi. Why? To cater to the emerging radical left wing of the Democratic Party. Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch, he's not a lawyer, I don't think he's a lawyer, but he tweeted out, recipients can refuse to comply with document requests and seek court relief from any harassing subpoenas. The House could be made to go to federal court 80 different times to pursue its harassment of Trump. I think Joe DiGenova's nailed it. My advice to anybody, I'd take DiGenova's advice. He's a smart lawyer. You know, and but that's going to be up to the people themselves to decide. Why would you put yourself in a position where all they want to do is embarrass, harass you over and try and use you to get and bludgeon Trump and a death by a thousand cuts? This could backfire. Could you imagine 80, 100, 200 people plead the fifth, say, we're not cooperating with your witch hunt. We're not going to be a part of the fishing expedition. You know, all of this is happening. It's all part of, you know, the grand strategy. It's not like they're all going to go out there and admit, oh, for 2 years we've been feeding you a lie about Trump-Russia collusion that doesn't exist, while simultaneously ignoring real collusion within their party, real Russian lies bought and paid for with funneled money, campaign finance violations, you know, that a real that real crimes were committed by their candidate and was covered up by the upper echelon of the FBI. Even the general counsel under Comey wanted to indict Hillary for the Espionage Act. There's no more clear a case of obstruction than what she did with the emails and bleach bit and hammers. You know, she gets away with it all. The FISA abuse is off the hook. I mean, you know, just out of control. You know, think how dangerous this is that everybody's warned about the dossier of Christopher Steele that Hillary paid for, full of Russian lies. Now, they say, I saw it in an interview, that McCabe stood behind the vetting of it, which unfortunately for him has to be a lie, because Steele himself has said that he can't stand by his own dossier. He himself has said that it's raw intelligence, maybe 50-50. I can't say any of this is true. But yet it was disseminated to the American people, Russian lies to influence their voting in that election using Russian sources. It was like the Uranium One issue. It was, you know, a Russian benefit. We knew Russians were here. We had an FBI spy within that network of Putin's. And we still have Hillary and Holder and others signing off on 20% of America's uranium going to Putin. Just an accident, $145 million kicked back by the very players to the Clinton Foundation. It's remarkable, the double standard. And the fact that you're going to go before a FISA court after you're warned, told in August of 2016. Remember, first FISA warrant application, October 2016. That you were warned that Hillary paid for it. You were warned that it was unverified and not corroborated. You were warned that the person that put it together was paid and hated Donald Trump. Okay, so that's August of 2016. The first FISA warrant is in October of 2016. And it's renewed three times thereafter on Carter Page. By the way, Carter Page was well known within the intelligence community. They knew him because he was debriefed by them every single time he went abroad. And while he won't admit it, I think there's probably a good chance that Carter Page worked for our intelligence agencies. There's probably a good chance. Just a thought. You know, that there's other reasons he was going to these foreign countries. And as you can see, nothing ever happened to him. But to get the warrant, the bulk of information came from the phony dossier. Oh, the phony dossier couldn't have been vetted. It couldn't have been verified. It couldn't have been corroborated. Why? Simple. Because the author can't corroborate it. So if they say they tried to verify and corroborate it, they're lying. So that means they withheld the important detail that Hillary paid for it. They withheld key information from FISA court judges. Then they handed them something they couldn't possibly in any way verify. And then they got a warrant to get in the back door in the Trump organization, as well as spies within the Trump organization, meaning campaign, and to stop him from ever becoming president, going up against the candidate with whom they have rigged an investigation to prevent her from getting the indictment that everyone else in America would get for obstruction and violations of the Espionage Act. Now, I'm told, well, you know, use the word, that would be a conspiracy to commit fraud on a FISA court multiple occasions to deny an American citizen their constitutionally protected rights. That would be a crime by anybody else. So what I'm hearing is that the inspector general's plodding away ever so slow, and the same with John Uber. I am hearing that there's going to be a massive boomerang. That as the Russia collusion story has collapsed, that's why you see the Democrats going to plan B, C, D, E, and F. Cast the widest net possible, look into every aspect of Donald Trump's life and hope and pray that there's something that they can use to bludgeon him and bloody him and death by a thousand cuts. And at the very least, prevent him from being electable in 2020 if they can't impeach him. It's sick. It's ugly. It's such an abuse of power. Can't believe this is happening to our country, but it is.
Yesterday, we announced that the numbers of apprehension at our southern border have spiked again, substantially. Since last year, we have been seeing 50 to 60,000 migrants arrive at our southern border each month. But in February, we saw a 30% jump over the previous month, with agents apprehending or encountering nearly 75,000 aliens. And at the current pace, we are on track to encounter close to 1 million illegal aliens at our southern border this year. The children are being used as pawns to get into our country. We have encountered recycling rings where innocent young people are used multiple times to help aliens gain illegal entry. As a nation, we simply cannot stand for this. We must fix the system. No rational person would design an immigration system like we have today. It's dangerous for Americans, it's dangerous for migrants, it undermines our nation's values, and it fails to uphold our fundamental obligations to the American people.
All right, that was Secretary of Homeland Security Kirstjen Nielsen saying the situation at the southern border is dangerous and growing worse. It is not a manufactured crisis. Senator Graham joins us now from the great state of South Carolina.
Well, thanks for having me. The DHS, Secretary Nielsen and the Border Patrol Commissioner made a compelling case that things are getting worse across the board. 335% increase in families apprehended compared to last year, 54% increase in unaccompanied minors. It cost us $136,000 a year to house an unaccompanied minor. Our law is such that only 2% of the unaccompanied minors captured, apprehended, ever go back to their home country. We're screaming to the world, if you can get to America as a family or an unaccompanied minor, you never leave. And we're approaching 700,000 illegal crossings this year.
I mean, that's almost twice of what we had last year. It's on pace. Do you think in part it's because it's interesting. I mean, when Nikki Haley left and she said she had the authority to tell certain countries certain things that Donald Trump will do, there was power behind what she said because they believed Donald Trump. They think he's a man of his word. I'm assuming people in these countries are now saying, uh-oh, this guy's building the wall. The door's about to be closed. Let's get there sooner than later.
But it's not that. A lot of them show up to the port of entry and claim asylum. 20% of the people who claim asylum actually receive asylum. So 87% of the illegal crossings in this country happen in between ports of entry. That's why you need a wall. 20% of the drugs now are coming outside the port of entries. That's why you need a wall. But if you had to pick between a wall and changing our laws, the Border Patrol said that our laws that require us to release people into the country before they're adjudicated is the biggest magnet to illegal immigration. So if you're an unaccompanied minor, under American law, we can only hold you for 20 days. We then turn you over to Labor HHS, and 2% of the people we turn over ever leave the country. If you're a family, you get captured as a family. Under our law, we can only hold you for a 20-day period, and most of the families are released into the United States to an NGO or taken to a bus terminal. That's why they're flooding the country.
Well, if we don't get it done now, I don't know when we're ever going to get it done. You don't see – now, the president will veto this bill that would stop the use of emergency declaration. You don't see any way that the House and Senate would override that veto, do you?
No. So the president's going to win in Congress, and I think he'll win in court. There's a statute that allows a president to declare an emergency and move money out of the military construction budget to meet that emergency. After today, if you don't believe we have a crisis on the national, on the southern border, you're just blind to the crisis. So moving the money around from one account to another is allowed by the statute. I think the president's going to win in court. He's going to have his veto sustained. He will get the money to build the wall. But what did I learn today? If you don't change our asylum laws, if you don't change the Flores decision that limits detaining people to 20 days, mm-hmm. never fix this problem.
Let me give people the statutory, the statute, the legislative authority that is given to the president. 10 U.S.C. 284B7, I think, is the best candidate of all of them. Mike Lee was the first person to point it out to me. And when you get to 7B, it says types of support for agencies of the U.S., the purposes for which the secretary may provide support under subsection A for other department agencies or the federal government or state, local, or tribal law enforcement agency, the following: construction of roads, fences, and installation of lighting to block drug smuggling corridors across the international boundaries of the United States. Now, the cross-reference, subsection A, says, you know, that the president has the right to build the barrier. So, legislatively, constitutionally, I think it's pretty clear.
Okay, so this is important. I'm glad people listen to your show. That statute allows you to move money around in the Department of Defense budgets to build barriers if you need it, up to $4 billion. The point that the president's making is that when you look at the needs, that's not enough. There's another statute that allows the president to declare a national emergency and move money around in the military construction budget to whatever that national emergency is. That's where Mike Lee and others say, wait a minute, the Congress did not appropriate money in the military construction budget for a wall. You can't take it and turn it into that use under the emergency authority granted by the statute. I disagree. I think he can. I think he will. I think he's going to win in court.
Yeah, I think so, too. So what's the vote going to be? So the president vetoes the override. I probably would be stopped in the House, correct?
Yeah, well, sorry, he's already won in the House. You got 245 votes. You need 285. You really need 290 if everybody's present. But based on the vote, you needed 285. There were 40 votes short. We're not going to get anywhere near 67 votes disapproving the emergency declaration. So he's going to win in both houses of Congress. And when it goes to court, what the president will say, wait a minute, Congress did act. They disapproved the resolution. I vetoed it, and the Congress sustained my veto. That's acting. I think he's going to win across the board.
All right, so let's talk about the what is now happening in the House. You worked there way back in the day, once upon a time.
Yeah.
And I've never seen a situation emerge like this where not only what the Democrats are proposing and 100 of them are supporting is a prescription for absolute economic disaster beyond even a depression, which would be to eliminate oil and gas, the lifeblood of our economy, and with that, the combustion engine, and with that, we're going to get rid of airplanes and cows, and we're going to force every American to rebuild their home, and we're all going to have the same insurance, and nobody can have private health insurance, but it's guaranteed, just like you're guaranteed a job and a vacation and family leave and medical leave, and just like you're guaranteed health care, and just like you're guaranteed retirement, and now with the wealth tax of Elizabeth Warren, we'll add daycare to the list. Between that and the announcement of endless, nonstop, you know, the widest net fishing expedition ever in the history of Congress, are they abusing their powers?
Well, the policy positions are not abusing power. It's just really stupid. CBO says the Green Deal, new Green Deal, would cost $93 trillion to implement. That will completely bankrupt the country. We don't have that much money. It's $600,000 per person. Medicare for all eventually means Medicare for nobody. Bernie's going to invite 80 million of his closest friends to join you when you get into Medicare who've never paid into the system fully. So these are really bad policy choices. In terms of abusing power, what Nadler's doing, in my view, is trying to get an outcome that was predetermined before the election.
Well, you already said, well, we know the president obstructed justice. It's not an investigation. He already has the conclusion. Right.
Yeah. They determined after they got the House back that this guy's got to go. So you got a billionaire, Steinert, whatever the guy's name, is spending money right and left against any Democrat who fails to vote against impeachment. So what Nadler's done is created a political goal, which is to impeach the president, and he's in search of trying to find facts to support that goal. They have determined that they're going to try to destroy Donald Trump and his family. They're not going to work with him on infrastructure, prescription drugs. They've determined to change America into a socialist country. Other than that, they should do very well in 2020.
Who do you think emerges? Because if you take the cheating of Hillary Clinton out of the 2016 primary, Bernie Sanders would have won that nomination.
Right.
So does that mean the base of the Democratic Party today is the one I describe as radical, extreme, democratic socialist?
Well, you got Hickenlooper saying I'm an extreme moderate, so there's some people pushing back. I'm dying to see what moderate looks like. We know what Medicare for All would do to Medicare. It would destroy it. It would collapse private health care, and you'd have whatever the government gives you when they choose to give it to you. The new Green Deal would destroy the economy in perpetuity. I'm curious to see what Hickenlooper would do. What is the moderate version of these policies? I know what Trump's going to do. He's going to take your health care dollars, block grant them back to the state so people close to you can make decisions, and if you don't like it, you can vote for him. I know what he's going to do with your taxes. He's going to lower the tax code to make it competitive. I know what he's going to do to the military. He's going to rebuild it. I know what he's going to do to the terrorists. He's going to kill them. I know what he's going to do to Supreme Court. He's going to make it more conservative. So I like the contrast.
Well, let's talk about the Mueller report, which we keep hearing could be coming out any day. Nobody even knows if it does come out, if it's ever going to be released to the public. We have hints by Rod Rosenstein that it is not the big blockbuster collusion conclusion that everybody's been feeding us for 2 years. And I think what I'm being told that there is now a real effort to hit the reset button, and all of the abuses of power within the Justice Department and the FBI among the upper echelon are going to be investigated. There are going to be indictments. We still are waiting Horowitz's report, the Inspector General's report, and John Huber's report. And what do you expect as it relates to Mueller and, you know, this 2-year witch hunt?
Let's unpack that. So the collusion is really conspiracy. The question is, was there a conspiracy between the Trump campaign, the president, and foreign intelligence services or agencies to benefit from the theft of the DNC emails? The reason I feel confident there's not is no one's been charged with a conspiracy. The people that would be in position to conspire with the Russians, Manafort, other folks like that, have all been charged with crimes outside of conspiracy, unrelated working with the Russians. So if nobody's been charged with a conspiracy, it's pretty hard for me to believe there is one.
Now, we've got to get to the bottom of something that you've looked into more deeply, and that is, how is it possible to conspire? We now know that every single high-ranking FBI and DOJ official was warned about the phony dossier. And even right. Its author now has said, I have no idea if any of it's true. It's raw intelligence under the threat of perjury. So Hillary funnels money to a law firm, to a op research group, hire a foreign national. They get a Russian group of papers dossier. That dossier is then used as the bulk of information to apply for FISA warrants to get into the Trump campaign via backdoor with Carter Page, and also disseminating the information to influence the American vote. It's filled with Russian lies. Now,
right.
they don't tell the court that they never verified it, because if they had, they wouldn't have been able to. All they would have had to do is talk to its author, and the author can't
right.
stand by it. The second thing, Hillary paid for it. They withheld that exculpatory information or I think damning information if they wanted to obtain the warrant from the application. Does that mean
right.
they conspired to commit a fraud on the court and deny a fellow American his constitutional rights for political purposes and to influence an election?
That's the perfect question. And you did a good job of going through the fact pattern. One thing you left out is that Bruce Orr, whose wife worked at Fusion GPS, who helped prepare the dossier, told McCabe and others that Steele is not a reliable person. He has a political agenda. He's out to get the president. He's very politically motivated. So they were put on notice that the author of the dossier actually had a bias against the president by one of their own in the Department of Justice. So the question for me, and really for the country, is how could this happen? How could you get a dossier prepared by a foreign agent, paid for by a political party, used to get a warrant on an American citizen 4 different occasions that's still unverified to this day? How could that possibly happen? And did they conspire for it to happen knowing that it was unreliable because they hated Trump? This is what Barr will look at. This is what Horowitz is looking at. And this is what I will look at.
And so you are going to connect. Does that also include going back to Hillary Clinton?
Well, you go back to the server and to the email investigation, because the people in charge of that, if they really wanted to help her and get Trump, my question has always been, you could never indict her if your goal was to beat Trump. So
you're right.
They look for ways to make sure she wouldn't get indicted.
Well,
because
I got to run.
She was indicted.
They rigged that investigation, even the general counsel, James Baker.
Yeah, yeah, because they wanted a political outcome. If your goal is to
I got
to
go. I'm out of time. Senator, you're the best. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you on TV soon. Thank you. 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. All right, we have a lot going on in the news, and I mentioned at the top of the show we're talking about the single greatest immigration problem as a country now that we have ever faced. and Kirstjen Nielsen, the Homeland Security Secretary, warning that as we look at the first 6 months of this fiscal year, we are now on track to apprehend more migrants crossing illegally than the entire fiscal year of last year. And this testimony comes one day after Customs Border Patrol revealed that February alone, U.S. authorities apprehended and detained 75,000 illegal aliens, which was constituting a 30% increase in illegal encounters or apprehensions over the previous month. And all of these instances result in the same nonsense. Oh, I'm claiming asylum. Well, only 10% of asylum cases go through. The rest are rejected. But in the interim, the other 90% that have a court date they're supposed to return on, well, they're not returning. Add to that the cartels, the gangs, the 90% of heroin that is flowing across that southern border into every small town and big city in America. Add fentanyl on top of that. Add the number of deaths we have every week, between 300 and 400 a week now. Opioid epidemic on steroids, and it's getting worse. You factor in the cost to the American people, and that would be the criminal justice system, the healthcare system, our educational system. And it is out of control and a crisis that is literally getting worse before our eyes. Part of it is, I think the rest of the world believes Donald Trump when he says he's shutting down the border. So they're trying to race across as quickly as possible to get in. Bill O'Reilly is with us. His best-selling book, Killing the SS, The Hunt for the Worst War Criminals in History. How are you, and BillO'Reilly.com. How are you, sir?
Good. We're investigating this tonight on BillO'Reilly.com, why the surge of migrants has not stopped. And we're finding out that it's very organized by the drug cartels, because they already had the system in place to bring narcotics to the border. So they're just adding migrants. So it's now a business for them, a multi-million-dollar business, where they charge between $2,500 and $5,000 for a family of migrants to take them from Central America or Mexico up to one of the ports of entry of the United States, where they hand them off to other smugglers, people smugglers named coyotes. Sometimes the coyotes try to cross the river. Sometimes they just put them there knowing they'll be apprehended with instructions to, as you pointed out, claim asylum. So in the beginning of the migrant caravan, it was generated by far-left individuals from Tegucigalpa, Honduras, who put out on social media that they were going to do this, and then a bunch of people got on it and came north. Well, that's not what's happening now. Now it's the cartels on social media telling people to gather in a certain place. They hand over money, and the cartels truck them up to the border in a very organized way. And as everybody knows, the Mexican government, many of the people involved, the soldiers and the police, are bribed by the cartels. So there's no inhibitor there. So if you want to come from Nicaragua all the way up to Texas, you can do that, and the Mexicans aren't going to stop you. So,
you know, Bill,
let me, a state of emergency. I don't know what is.
I was interviewing Secretary Nielsen. Do you know that these cartels, they may be evil because they're living off other people's dying, and these gang members, they're now using drones to map out the safest routes for the smugglers. Now, human trafficking is involved in this too, and there is, I interviewed a guy that had worked 13 years just dealing with the human trafficking side of our problem at the border, and they're trafficking young girls, even, you know, below their teens, and they're bringing them into big cities, and they turn them into prostitutes and slaves. So they're killing these girls on top of it, which nobody talks about. But when they use the drone, they're mapping out the best way to do their smuggling, human drug smuggling. And we're not allowed to take that drone out of the sky unless we go to a court and we get a court order to do it. By the time you go to court, obviously the drone is long gone.
Well, you know, DEA agents, American DEA agents, cannot carry firearms in Mexico.
It's insane.
So, you know, they say about cooperation, Mexico City with Washington, D.C. Well, where's the cooperation? There's no cooperation. And the young girls that you mentioned are part of the, well, you don't have the money to come. You'll just work it off when you get to El Paso or when you get to Arizona, and this is how you'll work it off. So it is organized. And then a lot of the migrants are forced in their backpacks to carry narcotics across. And so that is, you know, a dual people smuggling, drug smuggling thing. It's not, there's not a worse industry in the world than the Mexican cartels. I mean, these are people, if you read the El Chapo testimony, they just convicted in New York City about the corruption and the violence that these cartels reap upon their own country, Mexico, with more than 100,000 murdered every year. And then the narcotic deaths in America, 75,000 a year. I mean, and this isn't a national emergency. See, when you stack it all up, what you said in your opening remarks to me and the what I'm bringing to you is that now this is organized. It's an organized criminal enterprise designed to undermine the United States. And you know what the impetus of this was? It was the, we're not going to give you a dollar for the wall, Nancy Pelosi said. Well, that got a lot of coverage in Mexico and Central America. So, and the message is, we're not going to stop people from coming in here. That's what the poor people believe. That's why they sign on to pay $5,000 to the cartel, because they believe they're just going to be able to walk in here. Now, that's not true, and there's thousands of them sitting in tents in Tijuana, but they don't know that.
Well, look, we've gone over this in great detail. I won't bore the audience with it again, but we now know that, in fact, the president has legislative authority given to him by Congress to stop drug cartels in particular from getting into the country and do by whatever means necessary, including building barriers. Those words are actually in the legislation. They wouldn't even take a compromise that included their beloved DACA and support of Dreamers. So the president has been, what, there are 31 current emergency declarations that are still in effect from past presidents. And here the president wants to stop in a 2-year period 4,000 homicides, 10,000 sexual assaults, 30,000 violent assaults by illegal immigrants against Americans. Add the heroin factor to it. Add the fentanyl factor to it. Add the human trafficking factor to it. And if that's not an emergency, and what makes me more angry, Republicans are timid and they don't see the crisis the way we do.
Yeah, they see it. But it's the Republicans who are against the national emergency declaration who will vote against it in the Senate. I mean, there's two parts. One is they feel that Trump may lose and they don't want to lose their seat, so they're not going to ally themselves with Trump. And the other is the Rand Paul. We don't want to give the president more authority than he has. But what your listeners need to know is this: in the Democratic Party right now, Donald Trump is the biggest threat to the country. He overrides the border. He overrides every other issue. In their minds, the biggest threat to the United States of America is Donald Trump. So it doesn't matter if what he wants to do helps the country. It doesn't matter. They got to get rid of him. And everybody should understand that's how simple it is.
Now that the Mueller Russia collusion narrative is collapsing, and now that we see 8 separate House committees have begun investigations, they have cast the widest net that either one of us have ever witnessed in our lifetime, and in the hopes that they'll find something against Donald Trump. Now, I think they have two motives. One, they find a smoking gun that they would use as a foundation or predicate to impeach him. Or they will bloody and bludgeon him and it'll be death by a thousand cuts and he won't be politically viable in 2020. But nothing is for the American people here, or the folks, as you call
them. Don't you think the folks, though, even the people who don't like Trump, don't you think they've had enough? I mean, when you make Ivanka Trump's security clearance a big deal? I mean, you know, yeah. Really? Is this? And you get 15 people on CNN in a little panel, and they're all wailing about Ivanka Trump's security clearance? I mean, don't you think the folks have got, you know, I think I might want to watch something else. You know, my 15-year-old son turned to me the other day in one of these insane discussions. He goes, "Dad, why are we watching this?" And he's not an ideologue. He's just going, "This is so stupid."
Well, he hasn't spent enough time around Mr. Hannity. I think I could fix that.
But know, you're right. That's what they'll continue to do. But I think if the Mueller report comes out and it's no big headline in it, then Americans are just going to go enough.
You know, I love what Joe DeGeneva said. He goes, anybody that's called before any of these committees, plead the fifth. Stop it dead in its tracks, right there.
Yeah, that's what I... DeGeneva got it from me, because I said that on your show last week.
Oh, wait, whoa. How do you know he got it from you?
Because he got it from you.
DeGeneva's a smart guy also, you know, Bill.
Yeah, he's very smart. He called me and said, you know, O'Reilly...
Oh, he called you and said he took... I'm stealing O'Reilly's line. Can I have permission?
Look, and that's exactly what should happen. That anybody say, oh, look, but Trump has got to get out and define that. He's got to stand up there and go, look, it's not that we're hiding anything. We're not. It's just that we're not going to participate in this dog and pony show, which is designed to throw the government into chaos and hurt you. Hurt you living out in Boise, Idaho. Hurt you living in Lawrence, Kansas.
All right, hang on. Bill O'Reilly's with us. His book is Killing the SS, still in bookstores, massive bestseller. And as we continue, Bill O'Reilly is with us. His website, BillO'Reilly.com. When you look at the new Green Deal, no planes, no cows, no oil, no gas, no combustion engine, government.
Can I just stop you there for a minute?
Yeah.
Last night on BillO'Reilly.com, I know you're busy. You're doing like 85 shows and everybody.
No, just two, and it's enough.
I know. So on my website, BillO'Reilly.com, we do a methodical examination of who the money is behind Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez. Do you realize she's got tens of millions of dollars behind her, pumping money into her operation every single day? And this is Miss Socialist, Green, whatever it is, and she's popping into the SUV. Who rented the SUV? There's an Indian guy.
Well, we were doing the same thing because she also takes, now you can take Amtrak, which I've done myself many, many times from New York to D.C., D.C. to New York, but she prefers the shuttle. But
sure,
she wants to eliminate airplanes.
Paying for all this is one guy paying for everything she does.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the reportage on this? I mean, it's really unbelievable. I mean, I almost laughed when I saw it. And now somebody, I don't know who, I don't think it's conservatives, has lodged a complaint against this guy with the Federal Election Commission.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying he skimmed $850,000.
Let me ask you this, though.
No notice, by the way, in the mainstream media. Go ahead.
All right. Look, analyze this the way Bill O'Reilly does. And that is, you know, you don't tend to take sides. I strongly believe conservatism works. By Donald Trump employing the conservative principles, the largest tax cut, deregulation at a level we've never seen before, now we're energy independent, following up on better trade deals, there's a reason why he's nearly created 6 million new jobs and the economy has turned around so quickly and benefiting now so many. But let's look ahead to 2020. We're going to have two more years of endless Trump hate or rage every day by the Democrats and by the media mob. And whoever wins the Democratic nomination, let's say they support a big portion of the new Green Deal, what happens in 2020?
Well, Biden, I think, is going to get the nomination. The money men, the silent money men in the Democratic Party don't want a socialist Democrat. They don't want that. They don't think that that can beat Trump. So I think it'll be Biden and probably Kamala Harris. That's the ticket. So Trump can parry that if the economy stays in a good place. Now, we learned today we had the biggest deficit, trade deficit with China in history. So China's just hosing us like crazy. So everything that Donald Trump told the American people about China is true.
But and the president, in fairness to him, that's being dealt with as we speak, and we expect an announcement of some type of summit at Mar-a-Lago in the near future.
That'll be big, because then the stock market will leap again, all right? And then it'll be a huge victory that the Democratic Party cannot counter. They can't counter it, okay? So Trump has got to, like, narrow his focus on the economy. That's what's going to make or break him in 2020.
So and I got to let you go, and I won't give away your location. Bill O'Reilly is literally doing the show, sitting around the pool, drinking pina coladas at some undisclosed location. What's
it's
that?
It's a little chilly. You know, the Floridians, if it goes below 60, everybody panics. I mean, you know, they start boarding up their houses if it goes below 60.
That's true. It's funny. They'd have one snowstorm a year in Atlanta and every road shut down and schools were closed immediately. One snowflake. All right, Bill. Thanks, Bill O'Reilly, BillO'Reilly.com, for all his stuff, his latest book, Killing the SS. Thanks for being with us. Quick break. When we come back, news roundup, information overload. We'll get back into this. We'll take your calls. A great Hannity tonight. Tell you about that and more straight ahead.
Stay right here for our final news roundup and information overload
in the final hour of the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, news roundup, information overload hour, Sean Hannity Show. All right, the battle over the border now is coming full circle. We're going to have full coverage on all of this tonight. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen was being grilled once again before, you know, an arrogant, out-of-touch Congress. But they're now warning. And you got to, partly this is because the world believes Donald Trump. That's part of the reason. And the world is beginning to understand that Donald Trump's going to get the wall built. Doesn't matter if the House voted no on the emergency declaration. Same with the Senate. They're not going to override the president's veto. The president will recalibrate used monies or unused monies, put it towards the wall, get the wall built. He's doing it expeditiously. And so what's happening here is we have people around the world have figured out, uh-oh, the door is about to be shut. Maybe we better hurry. So we have another stunning statistic about the non-emergency that's taking place at the southern border. Now, illegal arrivals are set to hit 1 million by the end of the fiscal year 2019, according to Secretary Nielsen. And she says the agency is now on track to apprehend more migrants crossing illegally in the first 6 months of this fiscal year than the entirety of fiscal year 17. At the current pace, we're on track to encounter close to 1 million illegal immigrants at our southern border. You know, when people, I remember Michelle Malkin wrote a book, Invasion. It is, you don't get to just walk over into somebody else's country. Now, imagine you tried to walk across the border in the hostile regime of Russia. How well do you think that's going to be received? So if we're now on track to apprehend more migrants in 6 months than an entire year last year, well, you have to say some of that is attributed to the fact that people have figured out that Donald Trump is serious. And the testimony coming one day after the Border and Customs Patrol revealed February, U.S. authorities apprehended or detained 75,000 illegal aliens, constituting a 30% increase in illegal encounters or apprehensions over the previous month. And as the secretary warned, I can report today that Customs and Border Patrol are forecasting the problem will even get worse in the spring. And stressing the capabilities of authorities are becoming stretched because of the unique nature of the situation. And U.S. officials have said these families claim asylum to exploit loopholes in U.S. law and allow family units to be released into the interior of the country to await appearance. But while many of them initially claim asylum, let into the U.S., only 1 in 10 are ultimately granted asylum by an immigration judge. Well, when it comes time to remove the other 90%, they've disappeared. In other words, they get their court date, they go on their merry way, and that's the end of it. And by the way, Ocasio-Cortez now says those who support U.S. immigration laws are racist. Well, what other country just lets anybody into their country anytime they want? Look what they do in Australia, New Zealand. Let's say you have a boat full of people. They want to claim asylum. They want to get into Australia. Well, they're met. They never get to set foot on Australian shores. It doesn't happen. And what happens is they're given food, water. If they're in need of medical care, they'll go to an island, not part of Australia. Give them the medical care. Send them on their way. This is your food to go home. This is your water to go home. No, you're not coming in illegally. And, you know, the idea that we can be a sovereign nation, a nation that has a constitution, that believes in the rule of law, that believes that our sovereignty should be respected, our borders should be respected, why that is even controversial is beyond any comprehension I have. You know, I don't know what else you can say to people when you bring up 4,000 homicides in a 2-year period, 30,000 plus sexual assaults in a 2-year period, 100,000 violent assaults in a 2-year period, then 90% of the heroin that's killing Americans, that's, you know, put that on the list of things we got to worry about. then cartels, then gangs, young girls being human traffickers bringing young girls into the country, and they end up using these young girls and destroying them through prostitution. You know, we have 31 national emergencies now in effect. They've been doing this ever since 1976. No other one has ever been challenged in any way. The idea that Nancy Pelosi would use it as a weapon against, you know, to get rid of the Second Amendment, that's a constitutional issue. This is now, if you don't accept what is happening here is a clear and present danger to the United States and our safety and our security, you know, we're at the breaking point. How many more people, you know, have to die from a heroin overdose because we're unwilling to take the challenge of keeping people safe and secure? You know, there were numbers that came out today. Here are the numbers. A record 151,845 Americans died from either alcohol or drug-induced causes and suicide in 2017. And by the way, if you look at the alcohol part of it, it's only a small percentage of it. But from 2016 to 2017, the combined death rate increased 6%, and that is 46.6 deaths per 100,000 people. A lot of this, you know, when you're losing 300-400 people a week because of the opioid crisis, you're not going to fix it. Look, it's happening in every city, every town across the country. Every single person listening to my voice knows about heroin. They know about the opioid addiction. Most of you have lived it in ways you don't even want to think about. Families' lives are destroyed over one person that they love and care about getting hooked on this garbage. And it happens. And then every day they're on it, they have no idea where this was manufactured. They have no idea what the ingredients are in this. And, you know, dumb kids get hooked. They start with the, you know, grandma's Percocet or grandma's Vicodin or grandma's Oxycontin or maybe your friend's grandma's, you know, pills. Then you like it. Then you get addicted. Then you go on the street to buy it, and you don't even know what you're buying there. And then it's $80 a pill, and then eventually can't afford it, even if you're stealing and robbing and doing everything in between. And then somebody, you know, one of your genius friends that in your teens suggests, well, why don't you just try heroin? And maybe the first time you snort it, or the second time you smoke it and you chase the dragon, as they call it. Or then the next time you're shooting it right up your arm, and your life is over. At that point, the odds of you recovering are 15%. Done. They get you that one, you're done. How are you gonna get out of that addiction? Most people can't. Most people don't, and it's not gonna happen. All right, back to our busy phones. Let's say hi to Stephanie, who is in Palm Beach, Florida. Stephanie, hi, how are you? Glad you called.
Hey Sean, hi. I'm a big fan of yours. Been following you for years.
Oh, thank you.
Good. I'm just calling. First of all, I met Trump when I was 26. He was fabulous to me, gave me my first business opportunity before The Apprentice. That's one thing I wanted to say. But getting to my point real quick here is what I wanted to address is I think, call it a will to fight or call it for passion, but where is it on our side? The best defense here is a good offense. The way Eric Holder was used against our, the Tea Party and all of that, with Nadler here going after Trump and all of these guys opening investigation after investigation, why aren't we going back and doing the same thing to them? Why aren't we hitting them the way they hit us? Why aren't we going after their, contributors? I mean, I just, you go Google them, you look them up, you see who exactly is contributing to them, who their expenditures are going out to. Let's just open up a few investigations on their end. Let's go through their tax returns. I bet we'd find a lot more unlikely and more concerning information than we ever would on Trump, for that matter. And I don't know why we don't, play fire with fire here.
You know, it's interesting because there's been a lot of debate among people that I know about the president and early on deciding to cooperate with the special counsel. In the end, it was the right thing to do. I mean, we could have had a constitutional showdown over executive powers, et cetera, and we're not going to let this person testify, and we're not going to hand you that document. That's the game the Democrats play. And I think the president, good faith, thought, all right, we'll give you the information. You'll see it all. We're transparent, and this should come to an end. The saddest part in all of what you're describing now is there's something that we're missing. There's a big step that is being pushed to the side, and that is the entire Russia collusion case has collapsed. It's collapsed of its own weight. We've known it for a long time. Now, there was Russian interference and collusion in this 2016 election cycle. That we know. But we know it was Hillary Clinton. We know she paid for the funneled the money to the law firm, to the op research group, to Christopher Steele, who himself today doesn't stand by the dossier. And then we know it went. It was not vetted, corroborated, and it was used to bludgeon and defeat Donald Trump in the lead up to the 2016 election and to spy on his campaign. They had spies in the campaign, but this was a way to backdoor themselves into all things in the world of Trump, illegally obtained and violating the constitutional rights of Carter Page.
I think they know all of that. So now what they're going to do is they're obviously moving on to, you know, their step three here, and that's to go after him and attack him completely and spend the next, you know, all the way up to the campaign, and that's fine. But why don't we know there's no Russian collusion. We've known it for the last 2 years. Now the Mueller report's coming out. That's obviously not going to lead into their big grand plan of scheme of things. So, you know, why don't we start going after them? Eric Holder completely abused.
Well, there's one thing I would like the president at some point to do, and we've discussed it a lot. The president, maybe very, very strategically and very cleverly, has decided to be patient. I know a lot of people don't view him as a patient person.
I agree.
But the president will, at some point, I believe, release that Gang of Eight information. I do believe we will see the FISA warrants for ourselves. I do believe we'll see all of those 302s, the FBI reports. I think we'll get to the bottom of the struck 302 and why that was delayed and not written till August. And it was a February interview or January interview with General Flynn. There's something fishy there. Sounds to me like there may be two of them, one to cover up. And my sources are telling me beyond any doubt that there's going to be justice here in the end. All right, but I got to take a break here. Thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate your call and your insight. Thank you very much. All right, news roundup information, overload hour, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN is our number. All right, back to our phones as we say hi to, Rich is in Minnesota. Rich, hi, how are you? Glad you called.
Sean, it's an honor. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thank you for calling, and thanks for being out there. We can't do this without you.
Hey, what the world would be like without Sean Hannity, man? It's scary. Thanks for.
Well, there are a lot of people that like that vision of the world. They think it would be a better world.
Hey, not us, man.
No, thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
So I live in Minnesota, and you know this Omar, she does not represent Minnesota, man. I mean, she does not.
Well, the Dems are not dealing. They're failing to deal with virulent anti-Semitism in a forthright way. Now, in the case of Omar, you know, you got Nancy Pelosi with some fanfare, you know, saying the House is going to pass a resolution, a second one now, condemning anti-Semitism, citing the charges Omar had raised repeatedly, including the myth of dual loyalty. If you, like me, are a big supporter of Israel, our best ally and only democracy in the region. But, you know, they didn't have enough Democrats to denounce this. So they didn't even have the votes to do that, which was in and of itself inadequate. You know, there has been this strain within Democratic ranks that have gone on for years. Remember, I don't know if you remember Jesse Jackson, quote, Jaime Town. And, you know, there's been the allegiance with Linda Sarsour, for example, even with a presidential candidate like Kirsten Gillibrand. You know, it's the radical associations of Obama, Louis Farrakhan. We now see the picture of those two together, which they hid the entire time he was running and was president. This problem's only going to get worse because they don't have the courage to deal with it. All right, quick break. We'll come back. The latest on the border battle and all the other news and your calls next half hour, 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of this extravaganza. And what interesting times we're living in, I got to tell you. Really interesting times. You know, one thing I found on Newsbusters, it shouldn't surprise you, when we learned last week that the three cable networks are in prime time, when you deal with the other two liberal networks or fake news networks, you got a whopping 12 minutes of coverage as it relates to the Vietnam summit with the president, Kim Jong-un. The focus that day was Michael Cohen, bludgeoning the president. Now, here's another thing. You know, as we've been giving out all these statistics on a regular basis on the economy, when you look at the major networks, you've got, you know, job growth is, you know, unprecedented, on a tear, good for the American people, good news to report, but the networks just don't bother reporting it 95% of the time. Let me give you an example from Newsbusters. Since November of 2017 and the jobs report then, the unemployment rate for African Americans, Hispanic Americans have both dropped to all-time record lows seven times. The Asian American unemployment rate has also dropped to a record low. And same with women in the workplace. But despite all these eight separate records in this case, only one story mentioning a demographic record low during the ABC CBS Evening News casts, which means that 95% of broadcasts on the day that records are announced are actually ignored. They're actually ignoring the records. They're not reporting it. And of 21 evening newscasts, 20 of them, you know, the day the Bureau of Labor Statistics confirmed the record, well, they didn't talk about it. So you've got records are set in seven different months, two records occurring in the same month, and even four record-setting months in a row, April, May, June, and July of 2018, barely gets mentioned on any major network. Now, I'm sure they have plenty of time to talk more about phony collusion, which is now falling apart, which means we'll move on to the next stage. We'll just accept our losses, not admit we're wrong. No retractions, no apologies, no mea culpa, no examinations. How did we get it so wrong? You know, you think of one report that got Dan Rather fired. And it's like you get a wrong report every hour of every day on most of these networks. And they wonder, why do people not trust us? You know, trust has never been lower for the media. Just one story of the three broadcast networks acknowledged any of the record lows. That was CBS. That was in June of 2018. And they indicated that the unemployment rate for African Americans dropped to an all-time low of 5.9%. They failed to note that Asian American unemployment also had declined to a record low, 2.1% that month. So they don't want to give too much of a good story out because that takes away the narrative that Donald Trump is doing a good job, his policies are working, conservatism is working when it is properly, you know, used. That's why I'm a conservatism works for the people. Conservatism works for the men and women in this country. And the lie has been it's only good for the rich. It's not. You know, the greatest wealth creation and wage increases last year alone were the poorest in America, 6.1% increases. You know, it's amazing. We all know that Michael Cohen never visited Prague. It's not an issue in dispute anymore. But you have still a news organization, supposed news organization, McClatchy. They're standing by their report that he visited Prague. So anyway, Cohen denied all of this. But even when you're confronted with the truth, they don't seem to care. I see CNN is under fire. National Association of Black Journalists have called out CNN over the lack of diversity. You know, for all the talk and discussion about Fox, you know, Fox News is divided into two separate divisions. You have the news division and then you have the talk division or the opinion division. You know, and there's this myth that somehow they are different, separate and apart. You know, I've explained this many, many times what we do on this show. What do you do for a living? Are you a journalist? No, that's not what I do. I do journalism. I'm not a journalist. What do you do? I'm a talk show host. Well, what is a talk show host? Well, as part of my job, there are days we report straight news. Something is breaking. A vote is taking place. A natural disaster. War. Something terrible happens. A terror attack. God forbid. and we're just reporting what the news and information is. We deliver it straight. There's no opinion. We're just trying to get to the facts. Then we do our investigative reporting. That would be vetting Obama in 07 and 08 and vetting now the deep state. We have successfully broken one story after another, both on radio and TV, and have uncovered the biggest abuse of power corruption scandal in history. I am getting wind that this is going to happen, that everybody involved in all of this is going to have the Trump treatment. In other words, there might be equal justice under the law. We'll see. Then sometimes we give opinion and we're upfront about it. I'm a conservative. I don't hide that I'm a conservative. I'm a registered conservative. I like Ronald Reagan. I like George W. Bush. I like Donald Trump. The policies that President Trump is advocating for are policies that I have advocated my 30 years in radio and what my now 23rd year at Fox. It's been my whole life. Limited government, ending burdensome regulation and bureaucracy, lower taxes, got the largest tax cuts, originalists on the Supreme Court, energy independence, a strong national defense, build up our military strength. We're doing that, too. You know, standing up to the world's dictators, stop trying to bribe them to make them like you. You know, protecting America's borders, building the wall. I always said, you know, build the wall first, then we'll discuss whatever solution people want to come up with people that are in here illegally that are not committing crimes. Very simple stuff. Conservatism works. And you see it now. You see the forgotten men and women that we talked about in the entire 2016 race. They're the ones benefiting. And liberals try and diminish it. Trickle down economics. It's not trickle down. You build a manufacturing center. You build a car factory. You build a new steel factory like one is now being built in Alabama. You encourage manufacturing centers in Detroit, Michigan, elsewhere, Wisconsin or Ohio or Pennsylvania. Well, the men and women that have been struggling and suffering and that were told their jobs are never coming back, well, they're now getting career jobs back. The energy sector is going to be the single biggest job boom in the country. And if you're looking for a career job, I would start now, find out the companies that are building the Dakota and Keystone pipelines. Find out who has the energy rights where those pipelines are going to end. Find those companies, make job applications, and oftentimes they'll even train you and then pay you a good salary. And that could be a career change that is going to alter your life in the most positive ways imaginable, meaning you'll be able to get that home, be able to get that new truck, be able to take a vacation. You're going to be able to live a better life, afford better schools, and have a future for your kids. That's what I would do right now. If I was young, thinking about a career, I'd be finding my way into energy somehow, someplace, somewhere. Going to be a lot of money to be made there. We have the resources. The only thing we have to worry about is down the road politically if the left steps in and steps on it. And takes away the opportunity if they get rid of oil and gas, for example. All right, let's get to our busy telephones here. Let's say hi to Dick. He's in Aspen in Colorado. Been to Aspen once. Didn't have a great time there. I went skiing. Could barely breathe the whole time. I went to a place called Snowmass. I couldn't breathe the whole time I was there. I was like that guy that was worshiping Obama. Is that typical when you get a bunch of visitors?
Well, we get a bunch of visitors that are not in shape. They must not be doing their workouts at the hour and a half every day.
No, I do my work. Well, first of all, this is many years ago, long before I started mixed martial arts.
Okay.
I had skied my entire life, but the air for me was way too thin, and I took no preparations. I should have hydrated. I understand now they have altitude pills that are extremely helpful as well. Is that true?
Yes, and we have 40% less oxygen than where you're sitting in New York.
Okay, so then why are you saying I'm out of shape? When I got off the plane, my first breath, I was like, I need air. I need air.
Somebody's got to pick on you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I go, okay, you take it upon yourself. Go ahead, pick away.
Okay, listen, you keep talking about the FISA fraud, and there's always a question of why the judges haven't done anything about it. Well, you have to remember, when these four people presented four FISA applications, They were the leaders of the FBI and the DOJ. So an average judge takes a look at the application and sees Rosenstein's signature on it, he says, I don't need to study this.
Or Yates or McCabe or Comey.
He would never sign a fraudulent application. Well, they did, as you know.
They did.
And the four judges never believed that those four people, Yates and the other people, would sign a fraudulent application. They did. And they all knew they did. And they did because they were scared they were going to get caught.
Correct. Now,
so,
here's the interesting thing. Now, who is going to call up, and this is an important question, who's going to call up these judges and put them under oath and start asking them, in light of what they now know after they're fully informed, that, remember, Bruce Orr was warning everybody, DOJ, FBI, that it was tainted, that it was questionable, that it was unverified, that Hillary paid for it. It was a political document. The guy that put it together, well, he himself hated Trump. And now we have since discovered that under oath in an interrogatory in Great Britain, he can't even stand by his own dossier. But yet still there are people, you know, Andrew McCabe was trying to say, no, we did a pretty good job, we think, vetting it. He's vetting something that its author says is not true. Much of it has been debunked, but that's just to cover my ass because he knows deep down nobody vetted it. They just used it as a political, you know, sledgehammer against Trump.
So, Sean, you have to ask the obvious question. Okay. Why would these four prominent people take this kind of a risk, knowing what you just got done saying, all that stuff you just said is true? Why would they take this kind of risk at this stage of their careers? That's the fundamental question.
They didn't think they'd get caught.
Exactly.
Hillary was going to win the election.
Exactly. And they were willing to take that risk. Think of all the crimes you've exposed. You've saved America, by the way. And think of all the crimes. This is the most important and the most serious one is the FISA law they broke. And if one of these grand juries or the IG doesn't expose this and have criminal referrals on the most important crime committed that you've exposed for the last 2 years, this is the most important and most serious effect on our Constitution.
There's no doubt about it, because if you think of how profound this is. Now, Carter Page, who they targeted for these warrants, and I'm spending the time with you because people do need to understand this deeply and fundamentally. Carter Page was the Trump campaign associate that was targeted. He had worked in the intel community. He was well known to our intelligence officials and the FBI and the CIA. We come to learn, and I might have asked him. I didn't get the answer because he's probably not going to tell me, but I get every impression he probably was an agent. He probably was undercover. And all these trips abroad, why wasn't Carter Page ever, he was brought in to see Mueller once. There was no chance he was ever going to get indicted for anything. And Carter Page would go to these foreign countries, and as he explained to me many times, he would be debriefed every time he came back and that he was doing his patriotic duty. Now, I think he probably served a dual purpose in wherever he was, including the hostile regime of Russia. But if we get those judges, now, if Horowitz does his job, and I have some confidence in Horowitz, he's slow as hell, but I have the confidence because he's the one that discovered the Page-struck text messages, and he released those. So, and that put a big piece of the puzzle together. So, but yeah, if we get to hear from the judges, we already know the bulk of information was the bought and paid for phony dossier. We know they didn't verify it. We know they were warned about it. That would be then a conscious conspiracy to commit fraud upon a court. And that's what they did. If you did it, I did it, anybody listening to the show did it, I promise you we'd be in jail. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. All right, we got a big show tonight, the strategy of the Democrats, New Green Deal, investigate wide fishing expeditions. Is that going to play well for 2020? We'll ask Newt Gingrich. Also, the immigration hearings, the president is going to win. Good, finally. Aaron Schock had the charges dropped today. What does that mean when you're falsely accused? We'll tell you about it tonight, 9 Eastern on Hannity. Fox News, thanks for being with us. See you tonight. Back here tomorrow.